You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Pooh.
Go ahead and start it off.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, baby.
I love you.
I love you, too. Ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. There will be a hearing regarding the Governor's Council of States on March 2nd at the State Capitol in Pennsylvania, the East Room, East Wing Room, number 39, in Harrisburg. That's Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at 10 a.m. on March 2nd. There will be a hearing regarding the Governor's Council of States on March 2nd at 10 a.m. in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. All of you who live even remotely near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, should be there. And you should contact your legislatures and oppose the Council of States conference immediately. They want to convene October 22nd through the 25th, folks, and it's really a disguised constitutional convention. We believe that once they go in there and close the doors, that the only thing that's going to come out is a new type of government. No constitution. Who knows? Could be the constitution that I printed in my book called The Constitution for the New States of America, which they spent millions of dollars to develop. Colorado Senator Charles Duke is traveling to Pennsylvania to oppose this and make his voice heard. If you'd like more information, call Mike at 610-494-2113. That's 610-494-2113. That's Mike at that number. And I hope that enough of you show up to stop this travesty. It's got to be, you know. Don't go away, folks. Got a real good program for you tonight. I know you're going to like it.
Thank you.
on so long, folks. I was going just leafing through the material that I'm going to use tonight and forgot all about the show. That's how interesting this is. And I'm going to let you know about it, because what I'm looking at here is the new issue of Perceptions magazine. And it's great, as usual. I don't know what else to say. You can't say enough. I want to read you some of the couple, maybe, letters to the editors, so that you'll sort of get a taste of what people are saying here. A former L.A. Los Angeles, that is L.A. Los Angeles, police department officer's perception. He wrote in a letter, and I'm going to read it to you. Said, I recently received my first issue of your magazine, and Bill Cooper was right. Your magazine is excellent, and I plan to quote information from it and encourage others to subscribe. One of the main reasons for writing to you is to comment on the article entitled, Let's Get the Monkey Off Our Backs, Revenue versus Justice, Volume 1, Issue 7. Although I agree with most of what you have written, based on my own knowledge as a former Los Angeles police officer, and as one who has been fully awake and aware of the New World Order and their agenda, I must correct you on some terms. I have worked as a uniformed officer and investigator and a plainclothes officer in my days in uniform. It is true that the department told police officers to issue tickets. They put a lot of pressure on us to write them. However, most patrol officers only wrote 2 citations or so per shift because they were busy answering numerous calls and trying to fight crime. Only traffic officers, motor cops, and AID officers, accident investigators, wrote citations all day or night, and this was their primary job. An average citation took 10 minutes from the initial stop to release of the violator, not 40 minutes. A small minority of patrol officers, like myself at the time, refused to bow to the pressures of wasting time to issue citations, and it reflected in our rating reports. We spent most of our valuable time trying to fight crime, to prevent muggings and other personal and property crimes. I issued 3 or 4 citations per month. Los Angeles Police Department officials did not care in the least about protecting citizens from brutal crimes. I know this for a fact. I was ordered many times to disregard trying to catch armed robbery suspects who were preying on elderly ladies and kidnap rape suspects preying on young females, for example. Another correction is that the average police officer does not have access to citation funds. Police administrators have that access. They obtain the funds and then decide which divisions and units to dole out the funds to. When you state that regular police officers of the Department of Motor Vehicles have access to funds, I have no idea just whom you mean. There are no police officers in the DMV. There are DMV investigators. DMV, folks, in California means Department of Motor Vehicles. But I think what you may mean is state. Highway patrol officers who investigate for DMV and other state violations. I don't consider any DMV employees police officers, but rather state revenue agents, just like the state alcohol beverage control or ABC agents. In any case, your article made it sound as if the average police officer has access to these funds, and this is not true. Mostly, he sees it as authorizing overtime, or authorized overtime, given to him and his unit to work on special problems, just as with federal funds. And that's what I took the article to mean, folks, that the funds do go back to the police officers, not in their pockets, and I don't think that the author ever intended that. One other thing you neglected to mention is the vice squad. LAPD's vice squads were better equipped than any other investigating unit in undercover vehicles, money, etc., at least on divisional levels. They were certainly better equipped than detectives who investigated major crimes, such as murder, rape, child molestation, etc. The vice squads, ironically, only arrested suspects for misdemeanors. This, of course, brought in revenue in fines. However, they wasted thousands of tax dollars to bring in smaller amounts of revenue. Not even undercover officers or detectives on the divisional level had funds and equipment equal to what VICE had, despite the fact that the crimes we were investigating were often extremely serious, brutal, and horrendous. In addition, I found that most street-level police officers were honest, but brainwashed by the top brass on down. Many were frustrated by the lack of enthusiasm to really fight crime. There was never any war on drugs. We were only praised when we arrested individual suspects with narcotics or controlled substances. We thought they had substantial amounts at that time. But when myself and few others in LAPD and other agencies, including some honest ones in the DEA, tried to bust organized rings of major drug dealers, we found cover-ups and central intelligence agency ties in many cases. When I say other agencies, I mean surrounding law enforcement agencies, such as Los Angeles Sheriff's Office and others, as well as some in the United States Customs, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and others. That was back in the days when many ATF old-timers were good guys and not interested in confiscating guns from the average citizen. I saw the change coming with younger, brainwashed alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agents back then, as did the other ATF agents. But that is another story, of which I have many. Signed, Ed, from a Midwestern state. He confirms as a police officer, just as I have always told you, that all legitimate investigations into the source of drugs end at the doorstep of the Central Intelligence Agency. And that's one of the main reasons I wanted to read to you his letter to Perceptions. And here's another one. I want to subscribe to your magazine. I'm closing $30 because I suspect that your magazine is worth twice as much as you charge. I heard about your magazine tonight on William Cooper's Hour of the Time broadcast on shortwave, WWCR 5.065 megahertz. Cooper read your article on the militia. I'm glad to find that there are still a few people who manage to combine patriotism with intelligence. I feel grateful. I feel encouraged. After hearing tonight's Hour of the Time, I wrote a two-page letter to William Cooper. It confronts certain urges that should concern any patriot: immobility, complacency, and other self-destructive urges, urges that make slavery seem appealing. It also explores our sense of existence, which has become a sense of non-existence. Such considerations, though deep, provide us with honesty and clarity, and thus enable us to resolve doubts and other conflicting feelings. I want to take this opportunity to recommend a book to you. I've been recommending this book to everybody. It is Rodney Stitch's Defrauding America, expanding second edition, and this horrifying, staggering 654-page reference is a seething, white-hot journey through the inferno of crime that rages everywhere behind the facade of the U.S. government, signed Charles Obler, Farmville, Virginia. And Charles Obler is going to review Defrauding America, and I hope he catches on to the scam that goes along with it. And by that I mean the misidentification of one of the sources of a lot of the information in that book, which I revealed to you long, long ago, so long I can't even remember, ladies and gentlemen. But a lot of the information in that book came from somebody who supposedly was in the Central Intelligence Agency in the intelligence community who was not. And his name slips my mind now because I don't tend to remember the names of phonies. Let me continue through here. There's an article on the subtle dance of darkness. Have we been spun in a spider web? Very good article. The DEA's harvest, hydroponics outlet seeds prison terms. I read this article. It made me very angry. Because good people in this country are being put behind bars for nothing. Doing nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Just because. Well, just because, I guess. Just because. The way of the law, research and discovery of a state citizen. There is a legal difference between the words people and persons. Of several references in the courts, the clearest is found in the case of Horn versus People of California, found in 321 Federal Supplement 961, 1968. The people of California are not persons. How about that? A person, ladies and gentlemen, is a corporate entity, according to my own study of the law. Let me read to you just part of this article. I don't want to read the whole thing to you. Just part of it. I suggest you get a copy of the magazine yourself or subscribe to it. When Congress passed the Buck Act of 1940, the sovereign status of the states was replaced with that of federal territories. This moved the states outside of constitutional jurisdiction, since the Constitution was designed to restrain the federal government. The Buck Act was a coup for those in power. Although the Constitution prohibited direct taxation or income tax, when a state reverts to a territory, it becomes subject to the will of Congress. In other words, there are no restraints placed upon the government. The United States Constitution does not apply, and although the Bill of Rights is a great idea, it does not hold up in court. All territories which are governed by the executive branch come under military law. The president is the commander-in-chief of the nation. You see, I told you a long time ago the Constitution is not in effect, folks. And, of course, if you read excellent magazines like Perceptions, you'll find out. And you'll find out why and how and when it happened. If you read wonderful newspapers like Veritas, you'll have the whole history spelled out for you. Literally, almost moment by moment. It's amazing what has happened in this country. The Buck Act, however, was never entered into the Code of Federal Regulations, and therefore legally does not hold up under constitutional law. The idea stated in the Buck Act that a fictional state exists within a state truly is fiction. Furthermore, even if it was passed and properly signed, sealed, and delivered, the Buck Act would still not have an effect. In Coyle v. Smith, 55 Lawyers Edition, page 853, it is clearly stated that when a state is admitted to the Union, it cannot contract away its sovereignty. This was an old-fashioned court case decided in 1911 when the courts upheld the idea of a republican form of government. Unfortunately, though, when President Roosevelt implemented the emergency powers of the Emergency Banking Powers Act back in 1933, the Constitution was set aside. A national emergency was declared, and we've been under emergency rule ever since. So, therefore, all of these supposed constitutional sites, and all of these people who say Constitution is in effect, or that something is going against the Constitution, unless you deal with the laws governing the powers of the president and the declared state of emergency, which is all illegal also. And I guess what I'm getting at is I get very frustrated because people call me up all the time and say, they can't do that. And that's fine. In the law, they can't. That's fine. In the Constitution, they can't, folks. But in reality, they've already done it. You see, if you haven't got the guts to stand up when they do it and say, hey, you can't do that, and we're not going to let you do it, and they go ahead and do it in the common law. It says that to be entitled to a right, you must protect that right and defend it. And that if you do not, you lose that right and any claim to that right. Recently, all of these things were challenged in court. And you know what they say? They say that the lawsuit is frivolous because it happened so long ago that we have given up any right to claim the rights that were taken away through fraud. And that's really at the base, the ground root of the matter. And that's what everybody has to understand. That's why I keep bombarding you with reality. You can listen to anybody you want to till you're blue in the face. But the truth is, we have to do something about this, not talk about it. And you're not going to get any relief in court. Period. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you say. It's not going to happen. The courts have already ruled. And they've been ruling and defrauding and lying and corrupting and subverting and committing treason for so long that it is beyond most people's capacity to even begin to understand. And these are the things that you learn in Perceptions magazine. And without this magazine, you're kind of crippled, folks. You really are. You're kind of crippled. You're without a leg that you need to stand on. There are so many things in here that it's hard for me to determine exactly what to give to you. Butterflies, hens, and mushrooms. Butterflies, hens, and mushrooms. A tasty, healthful, oriental gift. A New York Times article in October 19, 1994, touted the nutritional and medicinal value of a specialty mushroom, the maitake. Until 3 years ago, when a New Jersey-based company began promoting the health benefits of this fleshy fungus, most Americans had never heard of it. Not so. I have. I've been eating it for years. My wife is an excellent cook and loves to use all of these different oriental mushrooms because she's Chinese and she knows about them. And maybe that's why I haven't killed over dead yet. I'm not sure. Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and the New World Order. How far can you open your mind before your brains fall out? By Wendy Wallace. I read this. And for those of us who study all of this, this is part humorous, part serious, part hilarious, and part tragic. And goes into a lot of prophecy and religion. Let me read to you some of this. Maybe all of it. I don't know. Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and the New World Order. Conspiracy theorists comb dusty library and bookstore stacks and absorb reams of seemingly unrelated material to make connections that substantiate a particular worldview. Well, not us, folks. We prove everything we say on here. We don't say anything unless we prove it. So, and it's not a conspiracy. And that's the first thing that's kind of funny about this article. It's not a conspiracy at all. It's all out in the open. On the other hand, those who have not been bitten by the conspiracy bug tend to dismiss proponents who have as the lunatic fringe. And that's not really true either. It's not those who have not been bitten by the conspiracy bug. It's those who have been taught that anything that lies without their realm of understanding is not worth paying any attention to. That's really what that's all about. Whichever one's belief, there is an area of the conspiracy information that has received little attention. And then she goes into the Bible and prophecy. And apparently Wendy has not really been paying attention because it's just not true. That has probably received more attention from those who write about conspiracy or what's happening in the world than anything else. And what's sad about this is these people who promote the view that this is all being brought about by the hand of God are teaching people to accept it and not resist it. For who can resist the hand of God? But I have to tell you, that's not Wendy's message in here. She's not telling you to believe any of this. She's just looking at it from a different perspective, and that's what this magazine is all about. Looking at it from a perception that may not be your own. And she even brought something up that surprised me and caused me to jump back in the books, and I haven't confirmed this yet, but I'm certainly very interested in it because I wrote a book called Behold a Pale Horse. And I took that from a passage in the book of Revelations from the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And she says that the original Greek word, chloros, is the root of the word chlorophyll, or green. And that it's a green horse, not a pale horse. And so, you see, we all learn things every day. Of course, I'm still researching this. I don't know if it's really true or not. But I will tell you this. It has certainly piqued my interest. Mapping a long time prophesied. Crop circles, earthquakes, and UFO activity converge in time and space. It talks about the new millennium. The Mayan calendar will end, and a celestial age will change, just like I've been telling you. Since 1992, earthquakes, volcanoes, and storms have steadily increased in number and in magnitude. In October 94, geysers in Yellowstone Park that regularly erupted at 12 to 14-hour intervals started to go off every 90 minutes. See, I'm just teasing you, folks. I guess you may have caught on to that. I'm just teasing you with things from this magazine because I want you to subscribe to it because it is an outstanding publication that you need to read. And they've increased the frequency of publication. Now comes out once every 2 months instead of once every quarter. So where you used to get 4 issues a year, you will now get 6. Isn't that interesting? Tarnished Innocence. Now, I am going to read to you this article because this is extremely interesting because of a trend. You see, if Forrest Gump came out, made a flash, won some Oscars, and disappeared into the mistiness of Hollywood, into the perverted little alleyways and shrieks in the night, that would be one thing. But all of a sudden, if you're watching television, if you're paying attention to the movies, stupid is in. What does it mean? Well, let me just start this out, then we'll take our break, and we'll come back, and I'll read you this entire article. Because I really think it is something that needs to be looked at. It's called Tarnished Innocence. Is there a devil in Forrest Gump? Well, if you saw the movie, it's hard to think of Forrest Gump being anything other than absolutely benign. And this article is written by Mark Nine. Innocence is a key to the kingdom of God. To be an innocent is a great and powerful thing, because when a person doesn't know enough not to try, everything is possible. In fairy tales, a key is always revealed to the idiot son who doesn't know any better than to give his moldy bread to the first forest gnome who asks for it. Of deep psychological importance, this key unlocks that place where one is like a child, open and without judgment about the wonder of life. Are you making some connections? Crystal Cathedral? Possibility thinking, Norman Vincent Peale, the power of positive thinking, the New Age movement. Oh, don't you dare bring up negativity, for negativity breeds negativity. I know people have lost their homes because to look at the house payment and much less think about paying it was negative. So they just didn't make any payments. Pretty soon somebody came and took their house away. And I said, well, isn't that negative? Oh, no, that must be a karmic debt, something that I promised to do in my last life because I must have done something that was bad and that I need some education and this is teaching me a lesson. You see where this stuff goes? I don't know why, but I have a gift, folks, and it's to see an overall picture and make connections that other people don't normally make. And sometimes it's not a gift. Sometimes it's a pain in the butt, but... Anyway, it's mine, and apparently Mr. Mark Nine has a little bit of this talent also. Let's take a break, folks, and while we're taking this break, you think about this, and I'll come back and finish reading this article to you. I think you're going to find it extremely thought-provoking. You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. We're brought to you by Swiss America Trading. And the person who heads up that organization is Craig Smith. Craig and I have become friends over the last few years. And we discuss our families quite often. Whenever we go down to Phoenix, we stop in and see them. And whenever the people, any of them from Swiss America Trading, come on up here, they make it a point to stop off and see me. Not because we are business partners, so to speak, but because we're all doing something that each of us believes is important in light of the others. I deliver a message on this broadcast. They pay for the airtime. They, in turn, make available for me and you and anybody else who wants to take advantage of their services to get their hands on some real money. And they have some pretty interesting ways. Under the mistaken opinion that you have to have a lot of money to get your hands on some real money. And the money that you think you have to have isn't even money anyway. It's paper. Paper is not money, never was money, never can be money. Dollars are not money. Dollars are only a measurement of money. In the law, there's only one money. Money, because of its very nature, must be a commodity which has an intrinsic value, a value all its own. The value may fluctuate according to supply and demand of this commodity and for this commodity, but nevertheless, it must be a commodity. A commodity can be stored. A receipt can be given for that commodity. The receipt can be used in place of the commodity as long as whoever ends up with the receipt can go back and turn it in for the commodity, which is the real money. When a receipt is used in this manner, it is called currency. Because there must be a unit of measurement of the original money, a term was invented in the law called a dollar. It comes from the first dollar, which was really spelled T-H-A-L-E-R, or thaler, and it came from Holland, or Dutch. And it was the first real money used in the colonies. And it was universally recognized. It was silver. Folks, even today in the law, in the Constitution, it says no state may tender anything in payment of debt other than gold or silver coin. In the law, the United States Code, it specifically states that silver coin is the money of the United States of America, and an equivalent value of gold coin may be used likewise, and that a specific measurement of silver and the equivalent value in gold is called a dollar. Whenever a piece of paper is issued in place of the gold or silver coin, it must state on it that any bank must pay to the bearer $1 in gold or silver coin. They were usually silver certificates. Some were gold certificates, the larger denominations. And these were the receipts. We got in trouble when they started issuing more receipts than they had gold on hand, and then they had to get rid of the gold standard and the silver standard and the real money of the country in order to hide their theft. And you can read all about that in Veritas, in the first issue, in fact. You're going to learn things that you never dreamed of before, and it's all going to be cited to the source and backed up in fact so that you can do your own research and verify everything that's written in that paper. You see, even today, in our law, gold and silver coin is our money. We're only using these fraudulent, phony, counterfeit Federal Reserve notes because we are in a declared state of emergency, and the real money has been taken out of circulation, stolen, sent out of the country. And we're dealing with instruments of debt. You heard a part of the consequences of this last night. But I suggest you call Swiss America Trading and talk to them about it. See, again, I'm just sort of teasing you, giving you just enough to make you want to know more. Because really, my whole purpose, folks, is to wake you up and teach you not to accept what you've been told. Go out and look it up. Do the research. You'll find that it's true. And you'll never believe it as much as you will if you discover it for yourself. And that's what I want you to do. Call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. Talk to them about this. Ask them how you can get into some real money with just a little bit of this phony paper while you still can. Because someday you won't be able to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And that paper you have in your pocket won't be worth one grain of sand from all the beaches of the world. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Forrest Gump, old Tom Hanks. You know old Tom Hanks, don't you? Old Tom Hanks plays a part of a true innocent. And while originally drawn to the film by this, the very heart of a human soul, as I watched, I sensed something else. When I say I'm speaking for Mark Nine, the author of this article. Gump is a sympathetic and compelling character. In him we recognize ourselves. We are the real people who are cast into this frightening and incomprehensible world. Are we capable of understanding our circumstances? Should we even attempt such an understanding? Both counts. The Gump answer, if Gump were to be able to answer, is no. In fact, the movie's message seems to be that our problems stem from thinking too much. Oh boy, turning off our mind is like sitting in a comfortable chair. Life seems easier, but the longer we sit, the more our health deteriorates. I call it the sheeple factor. If the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, the current unhealthful state of our nation could well be related to the number of minds sitting it out. Mind alone is not capable of understanding the human experience. Without guidance from the heart, the intuition, and the divine, the mind can become easily lost. The film molds positive archetypal forces together into an assassin's mask. Humanity is continuously portrayed as weak and confused, unable to lead or to recognize those who can. Gump's childhood sweetheart becomes symbolic of the plight of American youth, her inner desire to become a folk singer. And you can read that hippie, bleeding heart reformer. It leads to nothing more than the life of a stripper, drug addict, and prostitute who eventually is unable to care for herself or her son and dies of AIDS. Gump, on the other hand, a certified moron, continues to live a heroically successful life, all due to his athletic prowess, unquestioning nature, and simple-minded efforts to help others. Covertly, the movie leads us to assume that good things happen to Gump because Gump is good. This assumption then creates a de facto social Darwinism, which says those who are on top are simply more deserving. Deeper still is the message that good, by its very nature, is incapable of a leadership role. Are these premises presented to the unconscious as background assumptions so that they will not be questioned?
If given conscious attention, they're easy to discredit. But who gives most things very much conscious attention? How many of you dare answer that? Are all successful people good? Are all poor people bad? Social Darwinism is the kind of superstition, mind control that justifies the rule of a king whose authority is granted by God. And what about the girl? Does she really deserve to die of AIDS? Can Gump be good if he is unaware of having choices and of what those choices mean? Just drifting back and forth in the currents of life. And that's what really happened to Gump. Gump was a victim of circumstance. He had absolutely nothing to do with what happened to him. Nothing at all. Gump goes to Vietnam and is wounded while saving his entire platoon. For this, he is sent to Washington, D.C., where he is awarded the Silver Star by President Johnson. At the Capitol, Gump stumbles into his former sweetheart at an anti-war rally. Bear in mind that Gump, having shaken hands with the president earlier that day, is wearing a spotless military dress uniform with a Silver Star, shades of Bobo Grits. His former sweetheart's new boyfriend is a greasy, disheveled SDS, or Students for a Democratic Society leader, Reed, cowardly, draft-dodging intellectual who likes to slap her around, has dirt on his face, and is afraid of Gump, our goodness. In fact, all of the protesters seem to have dirt on their faces. The 60s had as much soap and water, folks, as we do now. Even protesters at anti-war rallies wash their faces. And I knew a lot of hippies, and they were all very clean, pretty intelligent people who really wanted to live in a better world until they got sidetracked with drugs. They were doing pretty good. Though the movie pretends not to take a stand on the legitimacy of the Vietnam War, by way of these surrogates, it actually sends a secret award of merit straight into the viewer's heart. For many, the 60s was the last time there was hope for America and the world, maybe because people stood up and said, enough. We're not going to be a part of this pathetic caricature of a society. Maybe because they were able to face the fact that big corporations and the military were controlling the government and destroying the nation, and they weren't willing to participate any longer. The movie also portrayed the counterculture's men as physically abusive toward women. In reality, the women in the counterculture movement were respected and enjoyed great freedom. In contrast, military recruits in the 60s were frequently told as part of their training that all women were whores and could not be trusted, and that is a blatant lie. I was in the military for a good portion of my life and was never told that, never heard anybody tell anybody that, never heard anybody ever say that they were told that, ever. We were trained and told and taught that the Vietnamese enemy that we were fighting was subhuman. We're ginks, gooks, slopes, slants. Rice burners. Those were all lies, and we were young, and they were our enemy, and we thought that we were fighting for our country. But no one ever, ever told us that all women are whores and could not be trusted. And that's the only thing that I could find in this article that was not true. It's a well-written article, very well done. Flashes of brilliance here, a perception of being able to look out and put the pieces together, much like the talent that I have found that I possess, and I like it. And again, I was teasing you. See, I'm not going to read you this whole article. I'm going to make you go out and get the magazine. It is a fantastic magazine, fantastic articles. One of my favorite magazines in the whole world. News clips and more. Telecast Incorporated is installing a reverse 911 telephone system in Indiana, giving authorities the ability to notify residents with pre-recorded messages in the event of an emergency evacuation, local crime, or lost child. The system can also call all-night convenience stores at preset times. If there's no answer, police are dispatched automatically. Boy, I tell you what, there's a lot of 7-Eleven clerks who fall asleep. They're going to get a rude awakening when those cops come busting through the door. Under the Bank Secrecy Act, you can be charged with the victimless crime of structuring, which is loosely defined as arranging cash transactions as to avoid federal reporting requirements. Penalties include forfeiture of all assets connected with structuring. Forfeiture can be based on suspicion only and can precede conviction. Suppose you are traveling in your car with less than $10,000 cash. You could be going to a bank to make a structured transaction. So your cash and car can be confiscated at once, legally, by a law enforcement official whose department then shares in the booty. And that's true. And that's just the beginning of your problems. You may face 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. You see, structuring is so vaguely defined that even the IRS does not know what it is. All cash transactions of more than $10,000 and smaller suspicious transactions must be reported. According to IRS guidelines, 12 deposits of only $900 each total $10,800. Probably would be regarded as structured. In 1994, a defendant was acquitted by the Supreme Court because the original structuring law required an element of willfulness, the judge stating that the structuring law should never have been on the statute books, found that ignorance of the law was an adequate defense. No longer true. The willfulness requirement has been removed by Congress, your elected representatives. All of this from the pages of Perceptions magazine. Boeing aircraft manufacturers have a special cannon that fires chicken carcasses at sample aircraft parts, usually wing edges and windshields, to test the damage potential from bird collisions. More than 4,000 collisions happen every year, requiring an average of 250 emergency landings or aborted takeoffs. Now, I want all you green people out there, get in your cars, rush to Seattle, Washington, and picket Boeing, because every year, folks, they are firing chicken carcasses at aircraft parts. Don't get too close, though, because they're liable to fire some of those chicken carcasses at you. Two men in Michigan used a gun to rob a bank teller of $2,250. Next day, they were recognized when they returned to the same bank, opened an account, and attempted to deposit the money. When asked why, they said they did not know what else to do with the money. My question would be, then why did you steal it? Oh, boy. Believing the public should have free access to privacy, Paul Zimmerman, the developer of the industry standard encryption software, Pretty Good Privacy, or PGP, gave it away free on the Internet. The government, wanting PGP to be very expensive and available only under license, now claim that PGP is a munition. Further, as the Internet is international, posting it on constitutes export. Mr. Zimmerman now faces years in prison if convicted of illegally exporting ammunition. A legal defense fund, which needs to raise $180,000, has been established. I think that's too much money to be used to put some common sense into some government officials' heads. All it should take is a wooden mallet and a sharp instrument to make the hole, and a pitcher full of common sense to pour in that hole. Where are we going with all of this crap? And that's what it is. Listen to this. On July 13, 1994, two Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms agents surrounded 21-year-old Monique Montgomery's home with high-intensity lights, broke down the door, and entered her bedroom at 4 a.m., a time that maximizes a victim's disorientation and confusion. They claimed to be looking for guns and drugs following a six-week investigation. Of course, nothing was found. Ms. Montgomery was shot four times in the chest and hip. She has now recovered. I suggest we get our congresspersons to take the guns away from the government. for they are using them for criminal purposes. The BATF also entered the home of the Katona family in Vacaris, Ohio, claiming that Louis Katona, a gun collector and part-time police officer, had falsified BATF forms. The agency brought criminal charges that were thrown out of court by the judge, who said the incident was trumped up. The agents violently pushed Mrs. Katona, who was several months pregnant, against a wall, causing a miscarriage. The family now has a civil suit pending against the BATF. I'm going to tell you, folks, if the BATF ever come to your home wearing those black masks and their black uniforms with guns drawn and bash down your door in the middle of the night, shoot them in the head. Shoot every single one of those. Almost said something I shouldn't. In the head. Make sure you aim carefully. If you can't aim that well, shoot them in the legs. But shoot them. They're scum. They're not Americans. They don't belong in this country. I don't even think they should be allowed on this earth. Maybe we could pack them all into a rocket ship and send them off to some asteroid somewhere. In my estimation, they are lower than whale feces, which can be found only in the deepest depths of the bottom of the sea. How do they find people in the United States of America who they can get to do these despicable things that we used to cringe at and fear? Could happen to us only if the Russians were the victors in an atomic war. Well, you see, it's happening here. And they're not Russians. They're BATF scum. Scum. The lowest thing on the face of this earth has become BATF. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Lower than the lowest worm. Folks, I would go on. There are so many things in here from the inside. Healing the effects of ritual abuse and mind control experiments. This article is tops. Among the best I've ever read on the subject. I don't know if I could do better. There's one in here about the feelings, the happenings, and the trial of the survivors of the Waco massacre. Extremely revealing. And you need to read it. An argument between the proponents of state citizenship and the opponents. Derailed intentions, jury forewoman laments Branch Davidian outcome. That's a confession, a letter from Sarah L. Bain, juror number 16, foreman of the Branch Davidian trial, to Judge Smith. And you need to read it. Folks, Perceptions is now published 6 times a year. Because of that, the subscription is higher. Those of you who got in earlier, you've got a good deal. $25 in the United States, $33 in Canada for 6 issues. $25 in the United States, $33 in Canada. If you'd like to subscribe, folks, and you can call right now and subscribe, and they will bill you. They'll send you your first issue and bill you. Make checks or money orders to Perceptions. When I tell you this is one of my very favorite magazines, I'm telling you the truth. And I read it from cover to cover. In fact, some of the ideas for some of the best shows that I've done on the Hour of the Time come from the pages of Perceptions magazine. Call now. It's $25 for 6 issues. Comes out every 2 months. Call 1-800-276-4448. 800-276-4448. 4-8, easy to remember. Or, you see, if you didn't start dialing right when I started talking, you're going to get a busy signal. So let me give you another number. 310-313-5185. Just call. Give me your name and address. I have promised them a long time ago that any of my people, any of my listeners who subscribe, will pay when billed. So they'll send you your first subscription and bill you. 310-313-5185. Get on. Don't chat for a long time because there are other people who want to subscribe, folks. 1-800-276-4448. And if you're sitting around the office at Perceptions, get off your duffs and go to work. 310-313-5185. 1-800-276-4448. Do it now, folks. If you can't get through and you'd like to send your money in, send $25. Make checks or money to Perceptions, care of 10734 Jefferson Boulevard, Suite 502. That's 10734 Jefferson Boulevard, Suite 502. And don't forget to put the care of in front of that. Care of 10734 Jefferson Boulevard, Suite 502. Culver City, California, Postal Zone 90230. That's Culver City, California, Postal Zone 90230. Once again, the phone numbers. If you'd like to subscribe, $25 for 6 issues. They'll bill you and send you your first issue right away. Area code 310-313-5185 or 1-800-276-4448. That's 1-800-276-4448 or send $25, make checks or money orders out to Perceptions, care of 10734 Jefferson Boulevard, Suite 502, Culver City, California, Postal Zone 90230. Good night, and God bless you all.
I was born to make you happy. I think you're just my style. Everywhere I go, telling everyone I know.
Hello.
Bill.
Yes.
John.
Speak up.
Send your fax. I'll call back in a few minutes.
You ought to know better. You can't send a fax on this line when we're broadcasting ever. I guess he just started listening to this show tonight.
In the summer.
I bet that made a lot of you smile.
Winter or fall. The only place I want to be is where I can see you smile at me. Like a stick without a budget.
Like a what? Without a dial.
Oh, I just got a new watch today, folks. I forgot to tell you about
it. If I didn't love you, I'd love to see you smile.
Okay. I know you don't know it, but I can see through this microphone, right through the speaker of your radio, and I can see you sitting on the couch, and you're not smiling. So, let's change that. Right now.